This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Minnesota 2nd District Congresswoman Angie Craig. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Minnesota's Angie Craig next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Minnesota Congresswoman Angie Craig serves a lot of farming constituents in the 2nd District. Craig says the 23 Farm Bill brings a number of challenges, all related to the price tag for what farmers need and what Washington can afford. She supports nutrition programs and says lawmakers face a tremendous hurdle in resolving the debt ceiling and national budget.
I think we've got to keep working to bring down cost. We've got to keep working to tamp down inflation. And of course, you know, it's exactly as I predicted 3 years ago. COVID was a little bit like whack-a-mole, that old game that I used to take my kids to at Chuck E. Cheese when they were little. And I know that's what we're fighting here. I mean, it is, you know, you have to be concerned about inflation, and you've got to keep working to drive down costs. And of course, the other side of that is that interest rates continue to go up, and you know, that has an effect on the economy as well. So I think we're still going to be challenged, and we've really got to keep working to do everything we can.
This past week, Senator Thune suggested that the debt ceiling debate needed to be resolved or would likely come to a conclusion at some point this summer. I'm curious, from your perspective, how important is this debt ceiling debate for the outcome of a new farm bill?
Well, I think the successful raising of the debt ceiling is just critical to the economy. I mean, we're managing all kinds of things that we can't control right now. This is something that we can control, and in fact, I did it a couple of times under former President Trump. So I think we've got to do that. I do think it's going to be really hard to get to a bipartisan consensus on the farm bill until we deal with the debt ceiling. That is just a recognition that you know, we've got divided government here. I'm going to keep doing what I do, though. I've built a good track record of bipartisan results in Congress, especially on the Ag Committee. And so that's not going to be any different with me with this farm bill.
There was a food policy summit at the National Press Club last week that AgriPulse presented, and there were economists on the panel suggesting this new farm bill could be $1.5 trillion, $1.2 trillion of that in nutrition. What are your thoughts on the challenges of hunger? Because clearly there is need, but it comes with a very big price tag.
Well, it's critical. It's important. As I've said many times, though, you know, we had a pretty good farm bill in 2018, and I think that gives us a solid foundation as we head into this year's bill. You know, I know lawmakers are, you know, at the state level are working to ensure food shelves and pantries have the funding they need to meet the demand, but, you know, we're going to have a robust funding of SNAP in the farm bill for it to get across the finish line. You know, I've been thinking about the priorities that I want to see included, and certainly nutrition is one of them. But, you know, I've got a farm advisory council and continuing to advocate for full funding of Title I programs like PLC and ARC, and then, of course, federal crop insurance, as well as conservation. We've all seen the effects of climate change, and we've got to make sure that we robustly give farmers the opportunity to address these issues through voluntary programs.
Ranking Member Scott last week said that this bill would be crafted to help families and also to help farmers. So based on what you've said thus far, Can you make the case for a larger baseline for the 23 bill, assuming it comes in 23?
Well, I tell you, it'll be a little premature to talk about a number from my perspective. You know, I think we've got a lot to think about as we sit down and write this year's farm bill, and we've got to get everybody's opinion. And, you know, the one that matters most to me is my family farmers. And, you know, we have some challenges. I'm a Democrat who thinks that, you know, we've got to be careful with deficits here. We're coming out of a whole lot of spending that was absolutely required due to a, we hope, once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. But, you know, I do think that we've got to be thoughtful here.
Texas A&M's Dr. Joe Outlaw has said, we could spend billions of dollars and still only raise reference prices by just a small percentage. So knowing that dollars are tight, but also knowing that we need a safety net for producers, what's the best way forward? Are there other means?
Well, you know, I think that we're going to need to get into the details, Jeff. We're going to have to sit down and talk to lawmakers across the aisle. Here in the on the minority side, we're just starting to meet. And, you know, we need a bipartisan compromise. I'm approaching it the way that we've approached every farm bill, and talked to Colin Peterson, the former chair, a few weeks ago. And, you know, his advice to me was, you know, don't screw it up.
How thoughtful of him. All right.
He's always got great advice.
So let's move with this. The Inflation Reduction Act, which I know that you are watching over in the House, did have $18.5 billion to boost conservation programs. And Senator Stabenow, the chairwoman of the Senate Ag Committee, had said that's off limits. Do you see a reason that we might look, or that legislators like yourself might look, to tap into those funds for other areas?
Look, I think that we need to leave those dollars alone. Those dollars are there for conservation practices. I agree with a good senator from Michigan. You know, this is, you know, I hear constantly from farmers and producers who are incredibly concerned about the effects of climate change and how that's going to impact their way of life. And, you know, few people in this country are experiencing it the way that our farmers are. And so that money to me is completely off limits. And, you know, we don't need to start removing dollars invested in the Inflation Reduction Act for other purposes. And, you know, we need to make sure that these programs that we have in this year's farm bill are well funded, and that, you know, farmers have the opportunity to, you know, voluntarily work to help take care and improve the environment, just like we know they always do.
Well, in covering farm bills over my career, it's a common phrase from leaders that have said, we've done the best we could with the funds that we had available. And I think that's been a longstanding consensus. But yet you're in a situation here that failing to provide risk protection could make it even more difficult for young and for beginning farmers. So how do you protect that next generation in what proves to be now some very challenging times?
I think this is going to be one of the biggest challenges of the Farm Bill, and it's, you know, certainly something that I think we've got to find a way to make sure that we engage young farmers and in the agriculture world. You know, price per acre is out of control everywhere. We know that. You know, it's a real challenge for these new and beginning farmers to get up and going. And unless we find a way to continue to pick up the mantle and help these next generation of family farmers, then it is going to be really difficult. And, you know, even for family farmers who are looking to pass the farm down to the next generation, that can often be a little bit challenging. And that's why you know, I've been so proactive in leading the effort in Congress to make sure that the administration doesn't make any changes to stepped-up basis that could impact that next generation of family farmers. But new farmers, beginning farmers, it is a real challenge. And, of course, with interest rates going up, again, I'm back to my whack-a-mole analogy. It's going to be, I'm sure at the end of the farm bill, just like everyone, we'll all be, completely dissatisfied. And I'm sure at the end of the farm bill, just like everyone, we'll be proud of our work as well.
Knowing how tight the funds are, obviously, I guess one of the phrases that I might suggest about the funding is we have a steak appetite with a baloney budget. how do you, there are those who are making a tremendous case now that we need to spend more on research. There are those that are pointing out that it's been years since we increased funds for foreign market development and market access programs. There is a lot of need, and I wonder, can we make the case for those areas as well?
I don't think we've ever fully funded enough for market development. Quite frankly, that'll be something that I'm keeping a close eye on. But I think at the end of the day, you are absolutely right. We're going to have to make some tough choices for funding in the Farm Bill. I had a trade ambassador in the building a few weeks ago, and I'd like to see outside of the Farm Bill more focus on ag trade from the current administration, and that was one of the conversations that I started in the room with her.
So let's pick that up, and then we'll come back to the Farm Bill. Mexico still attempting to ban GMO corn from the U.S. And then to the north of you in Canada, they've not lived up yet to their agreement with regard to dairy imports from the U.S. We have an agreement, but our neighbors aren't playing by the rules.
Both of those topics came up in our conversations. And, I emphasize that I would like the administration to focus more fully on holding our neighbors and partners accountable to their commitments. And, what does that mean? I'll just leave it open-ended, but I made it clear that, trade and new markets, new market opportunities, and holding our friends accountable for doing what they say they will do is really important. And I definitely raised the GMO issue directly. I think she'd just had a meeting there in Mexico, and so it's something that we are especially focused on. And again, I won't get ahead of the administration here, but I'm really hoping that we can hold our friends accountable.
So back to the Farm Bill for just one more. What do you see that the livestock industry needs in this bill and livestock producers?
Livestock producers in particular in the state of Minnesota had a real challenge with haying and grazing, I guess summer before last. And, we just weren't getting any rain. And so I think we're going to have to look at, what flexibilities can we write into the Farm Bill. There's some resistance to that, but that's an open conversation that I want to continue to have with my livestock producers especially.
Last week on this program, Senator Deb Fischer discussed her legislation helping farmers secure more precision technology. Is this close or near to the mindset that you had with your Precise Act?
Yeah, as we were thinking about, I hear all the time, the need for more precision ag technology in my district. And, even to our smaller family farms and farmers who are just starting out so that they'll have more support. So I was really happy to work with Representative Henson from Iowa, as well as my colleague from Minnesota, Mr. Finstad, to introduce the Precise Act. And so, the technology, it helps farmers make management decisions. It helps them conserve resources. And in the end, it'll help reduce chemical use on farms. And so, the ability of farmers to be able to address issues related to climate change, address conservation practices, I think, certainly the technology is something that we want to continue to promote.
Last week, Senator Fischer talked about her legislation for E15 sales year-round. I know Senator Grassley has introduced his Next Generation Fuels Act, but you're not left out of that fray. You've been involved in renewable fuels, and you also have language that you've introduced in the House. Can you share us some of the details of it and why you feel like that's especially important?
Well, when I talk about biofuels in a district that's 65% corn and soybeans, I mean, that's near and dear to my family farmers' hearts. And so, you know, I think that we've got to take an all-of-the-above energy approach because that's what's best for our farmers, our economy, and for working families. I'm proud to be the first member of Congress to get year-round E15 across the finish line here in the U.S. House of Representatives in the last Congress. And it, you know, it's been a really interesting process because, you know, my bill that would allow year-round sales of E15, you know, at a time when gas prices were high in the middle of last year, they're ticking back up, at least in Minnesota in the 2nd District, just a tad bit. And that year-round access, it's just, you know, it's cheaper at the pump. It creates new markets for family farmers. It supports economic growth in our rural communities. And so it's really a win at every stage of the supply chain. So I worked with Rep. Smith of Nebraska, Adrian, the first time around. And then we're going to push it all the way here this time, too. And I think we'll have good, strong bipartisan support.
Is there the political will in Congress to see legislation like this approved?
Well, you know, it wasn't the easiest piece of legislation in the world to get across the first time with my Democratic colleagues, to be candid about it. But, you know, we had a good discussion in the caucus. I think it had a lot of support in the end. And I do think that this is legislation that I'll be working across the aisle to. Now that we are not in the majority, I'm going to need Adrian, Rep. Smith, to really work his leadership to get it back to the House floor. And if he can do that, I think I can bring along a lot of Democratic votes as well.
Is it frustrating, and I guess I'm asking candidly, but you see that there are a number of Midwestern governors asking the EPA to allow E15 sales in their states, and they proved that using the fuel would be better for the environment. And the EPA was much longer than the 90 days that they're allotted to make a decision. And then the decision wasn't about 23, but holds up until 24. Frustrating for those states and for those leaders.
Yeah, I think it's really, I mean, it is frustrating. You know, the RVO targets last year were frustrating, or a couple of years ago were frustrating. But I think, you know, I think the EPA has, you know, they're now on record indicating that there's acknowledgement that, you know, it is better for the environment. And, you know, that was an important admission to me. And, you know, it's just ridiculous that these Midwestern governors are having to, you know, come and ask for this when we ought to just pass this bill. And that way that the certainty is provided to our producers and consumers and retailers know that E15 is going to be available year-round.
When I talk to members of the renewable fuels group and when I talk to farmers about it, they seem a bit frustrated that the administration is pushing so hard with electric vehicles and putting a lot of money behind that new technology, when at the same time renewable fuels offer immediate benefits with regard to environment, and there's already those vehicles out there that could benefit from that renewable source. I know that you had legislation and you saw some funds that were approved of helping to improve rural electric co-ops and service throughout the rural part of your state. Is the country ready for that push to electric vehicles, and how do you balance transportation for the next generation?
Well, you know, I often point out to my colleagues that, and the administration, without E85, for example, California wouldn't be meeting its carbon emission reduction goals. It is fantastic that we want to move to a larger percentage of the population of consumers to electric vehicles. That's great. But that is not going to happen overnight. And the point I've made to some of my colleagues is, you know, it actually is not that progressive because, you know, not everybody's going to be able to afford an electric vehicle in the next 10 years. And so there again, needs to be a period of time where we are transitioning, and renewable fuels are just such a great alternative. And of course, it's a great way to support our family farmers, a great way to reduce carbon emissions overall. And it's a no-brainer when you sit and you talk to people about it. I think that some states, some folks have set goals that they probably aren't going to reach. If we had more of a all of the above transition plan, I think that would be a better approach.
I have to wonder, is the electric grid of the nation and the supply of electricity there to support such increases in electric vehicles?
Well, I think the short answer is it is not today ready. And so, there will be a transition. It is not going to happen overnight. And certainly we need to strengthen the grid system across the United States. Texas can't even handle what it's got someday. So, I think that certainly we need progress, and that's great. But at the end of the day, we have to be careful about how far, how fast, and just acknowledge that how we get there really, really matters. And I personally think, biofuels, ethanol, biodiesel are going to be a huge part of the transportation sector and how we get there.
I have plans this summer to be able to experience some of the lakes in your state. I've heard that it's beautiful. So with water in mind, what are your thoughts on the Biden administration's Waters of the U.S. rule that is now the regulation of the land in 48 states?
Well, when that was presented to us on the House floor, I voted with my Republican colleagues on it. Not that I don't think parts of that rule are perfectly appropriate, but I just don't think the rule gave family farmers the clarity that they needed in the definition that they needed in order to define what is a waterway. Is it a ditch? Is it low-lying grassland? And I voted with Republicans as a protest to the Biden administration that I do think that they've got some work still yet to do, and that they haven't given family farmers the clarity that that they needed. And the ranking member of the Ag Committee, David Scott, joined me in that vote in sending that message.
Congresswoman, we thank you for your service to agriculture in the nation and certainly to your state. Thanks for taking time to be with us here on this edition of Open Mic. You've been here before, and you know that today you have the last word.
Well, my last word is just this. I'm going to protect crop insurance in the Farm Bill. I'm going to focus on conservation. And then the new and beginning farmer, it's a real challenge, and we've got to figure it out.
Our thanks to Minnesota 2nd District Congresswoman Angie Craig, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.